The NFL playoffs are here. Watch every game of the postseason for free with the Yahoo Sports app or the official app of the NFL on your phone or tablet. Plus, get all your latest breaking news, highlights, and more. Download the NFL app or the Yahoo Sports app in your app store or at NFL.com/mobile today. Certain restrictions and data rates may apply. What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. Fabs, I think has a touch of the plague. So feel better, dude. Hopefully he'll be back with us next week. But all right, it's Championship Wednesday, which I think means a lot more, obviously, in real football than it does in fantasy.
But it does. But just a little bit more.
Just a little bit more.
Just a Super Bowl berth on the line.
That's it. No big deal. Yeah. No big deal. Are Mike Vrabel's private parts feeling a little nervous right now?
Hey, you know what? He put it on the line.
He absolutely did.
He put it on the line, and the Titans, I think, have exceeded everyone's best.
Oh, without a doubt. Passes,
without a doubt, yeah.
Without a doubt.
Good for Mike Vrabel, honestly.
Right?
Good for Mike Vrabel.
I don't wish ill upon anyone, but it is going to be an interesting time if the Titans somehow win a Super Bowl. See what happens. That was a story that popped up. In case you don't know what we're talking about, just Google.
Google Mike Vrabel Super Bowl, and that should get you everywhere.
That should get you anything you need to know.
Exactly.
At this point. Oh, man. We will talk about the championship games, though, for those of you who are still playing fantasy in some form or other. So we'll go through some of the big topics there. And also just some news and notes, some interesting stories that are football or football-ish that we might want to talk about. But before we do any of that, go behind the glass, talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's up?
Yeah, looking forward to the games this weekend. You have the high-powered offense team versus the ground-and-pound team and defensive team in the AFC, and you have pretty much the same thing in the NFC, the high-flying offense versus the ground-and-pound and defensive team, although I think the 49ers' defense is a tad better than the Titans, but I'm sure you have quite a bit of nerves racking up before these Sundays games.
It's why right now I don't, but now we get to Sunday, it'll probably kick in on Sunday afternoon at some point. Right now, like, everything's fine.
You wake up like trying to eat breakfast, it's just not going down. This is not happening.
Sunday afternoon may be a bit of a different story. It's been a while. I mean, for 49ers fans, it's been a while since we've been here. So.
Yeah, and also not to change topics, but a lot of retirement news lately, and especially with Luke Kuechly, and I know we don't really talk that much defense here, but it is really strange for somebody who is a year younger than him, and I grew up basically watching him play college, getting drafted, and you think about it, like, you know, and we're all relatively young here, like our careers are pretty much just starting in the middle, whatever, and like his main career is kind of over, and you think about how much he put on the line, and that really you really do think about, like, wow, these guys are warriors, and like they do this thing for their entire lives, and like that's boom, it's done, it's over with, and it's it makes you think of like your own mortality in a way, and like how much these guys truly care, and it's if you don't appreciate football and you see like a guy like Luke Kuechly, I don't know how, like, you have to have like a pulse and just not be like, wow, that guy is awesome and good for him.
You know, it's a thing I've always thought about, that with for professional athletes, and you talk about the time investment, you know, from youth sports through
old,
you know, high school, college, what have you. To put all that time and investment, and even for guys who play a long time, I mean, Tom Brady is, you know, at the end of his career, he's going to retire. He's going to be, you know, I mean, Tom Brady is a few months younger than I am, right? He'll retire, and in theory, you still have a lot of life ahead of you, right? Like, you have finished a career. You know, even guys like, you know, Calvin Johnson retired at 30 years old, right? I mean, in football terms, yes, that is kind of old. But in real life terms, that's really young, man.
Exactly. And I think football years is you know, it's kind of one of those things, like you mentioned, these guys have been putting their bodies on the line since they were like 10 or 11 years old.
Right.
Now, that's a lot of hits to take over time. And Kuechly is obviously, he's given a lot of hits too. And those add up.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, that's a good way to get into us doing a little bit of news.
Let's hear the news.
Yeah, there is a lot of news about guys retiring or not retiring. Let's start with a piece of news that broke literally just before we came in here to record this podcast. Larry Fitzgerald is not retiring, not yet at least. He signed a one-year, $11 million deal to return to the Cardinals for his 17th season, which is absolutely incredible. Believe it or not, Larry Fitzgerald led the Cardinals in receiving this past year. So, you know, some things change, some things stay the same. I would think that in year 17, and Graham, I know we have said this multiple times, at some point he will pass the torch to somebody else. Presumably that somebody else is Christian Kirk. But I have also have a feeling that Larry Fitzgerald's still going to get drafted in a lot of fantasy leagues this year.
Yeah, Larry Fitzgerald and Frank Gore must have the same trainer.
They probably do.
They've got to be sharing some sort of like youth serum as well that just like, I don't know, keeps their muscles and everything loose. I don't know, man. Fitz is never going to retire. He's never going to go away. But man, you're right. Cardinals have to do something
else.
At
some point,
they've got to do something else, especially now since they're playing four receivers all the time.
Right.
They're going to certainly have to draft some guys. It'll be interesting to see how Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella, the two guys they did draft, and Keyshawn Johnson too.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how they use those guys moving forward, but they certainly are going to be in the market for a receiver, and this is the perfect rookie receiver class to do it in. But yeah, Fitz is back, man. He's going to be back. He'll be playing full time in the slot.
Right?
He'll catch probably 60 balls again.
He had 75 catches, just over 800 yards this past year. I'm not willing to give up yet on the receivers the Cardinals drafted. I mean, you know,
I'm with you.
Isabella had a couple of big plays during the season. Keyshawn Johnson had, I think, a nice game or two during the year. Hakeem Butler, we didn't even get to see because he got hurt before the season and didn't play. So I'm not really ready to quit on those. Although, we talked about this. When they signed Michael Crabtree, I think that was sort of a signal that some of those guys weren't quite ready.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, I just think they were dying for bodies at that point, too, because it was right after the Butler injury, and it was kind of clear that Isabella was coming on slowly. I'm really interested to see how Indy Isabella plays in the second year. Mm-hmm. But Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals and Kyler Murray are going to be in the market for some receivers.
I would think so. One guy who did retire, Antonio Gates, is finally hanging him up. He was synonymous with one of those guys that every time he made a play, somebody would always mention, you know, Antonio Gates used to play basketball, right?
Now every tight end used to play basketball.
Right, pretty much. But he does retire as the all-time touchdown leader for the tight end position. One of the guys who reaches back into San Diego Charger history. I know it's not that far away, that long ago, but definitely during some of the heyday of the San Diego Chargers, played with LaDainian Tomlinson down there. Will always be remembered. And I guess this is a slam dunk. If we were doing a fantasy Ring of Honor, he is in there, right?
100%. You know, I was looking back at actually his fantasy finishes since his rookie year, so from 2004. To 2016, Antonio Gates finishes a top 12 tight end every single year. From 2004 to 2007, he finishes the tight end one, and tight end two in four straight years. I mean, he's seriously one of the gold standard players in fantasy football history.
Yeah, I remember playing in a league with some friends for a while, and my friend who was the commissioner at the time said his tight end drafting motto was, if you don't get Gates, then wait.
Yep.
That was pretty much it. You know, like if you were going to reach for a guy at the tight end position, Antonio Gates was the one. Other than that, you just sit back and wait for somebody else later.
Yeah, and the craziest thing, too, is like Gates, outside of like 1 year, maybe 2010, he didn't really miss games at all.
Yeah.
Like, he was just consistently on the field and consistently scoring points.
Yeah. Obviously later in his career, injuries sort of crept up, age sort of crept up. The Chargers have been trying to transition to Hunter Henry. I think last year they finally sort of got what they were hoping for in some ways out of Henry. And so, after a long, illustrious career, all with one franchise. I mean, he did play 2 years in Los Angeles, but he was a Charger from start to finish.
That never happens anymore either.
No.
So cool.
It really doesn't. I mean, I guess Larry Fitzgerald potentially could be the next one. We'll see what happens with Tom Brady if he leaves New England or if he comes back. But yeah, it's very, very rare now. So congrats to Antonio Gates on an outstanding career. And 5 years from now, I'm sure we'll be hearing his name called for Canton, Ohio. Marshawn Lynch, who came back at the end of this season because the Seahawks were desperate for running back help. He is not certain whether or not he is going to come back next year. I think we talked a little bit on Monday about his, protect your chicken, take care of your chicken, his quick press conference that he had. But he didn't say whether or not he's going to play next year. I would think some of it has to do with whether or not, you know, like how Chris Carson comes back, Rashad Penny comes back. I think it'd be fun to see Marshawn Lynch play, but I think his best days are long gone.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty clear, too. He did not have the same burst in his legs. I mean, he could obviously still drive a pile. We saw him score 3 touchdowns, which was pretty incredible, but the burst is not there for Marshawn like it once was. Speaking of Hall of Famers, Marshawn Lynch is a Hall of Famer, right?
I don't know.
Okay, interesting.
I don't know.
What's your argument against it?
Well, I think he had a really solid run at one point, but it was relatively short.
Fair.
Sort of like
Terrell Davis, maybe?
Yeah. And I know Terrell is in, obviously, and TD is one of our colleagues here and is a great guy. I just think for Marshawn, his run was amazing, but it was basically 4 years.
Yeah, he did have those 2 years where he ran for 1,000 yards in
Buffalo. Which I think people forget about the Buffalo portion of his career.
He was awesome. He was awesome in Buffalo. He caught 47 balls his second year. I mean, he was really good. Mm-hmm. I think Marshawn will get in. I'm with you that he's probably on the cusp, mm-hmm. but he'll eventually get in. I don't think he's a first ballot guy, but you know, he's given us so many just fantastic moments, was a part of so many fun teams and scored so many touchdowns. I think the Hall of Fame voters, once, you know, some time passes, they're going to look back on Marshawn's career and think of him really, really positively.
You know, and I also think with Marshawn, and I said this a few years ago with Frank Gore before he decided to play forever, that I think we're going to look back on running backs kind of this era and the years previous, and we're going to look at them differently now. As the position sort of gets diversified, as you have so many more committees, you're going to look back at the guys who would regularly get 250, 300 carries a year and say, wow, these guys were actually, you know, because of the way the position has changed, because of the way teams use running backs, I think we're going to look at these guys differently maybe 10, 15 years from now. So like a guy like Marshawn Lynch, you look at him now and you're like, I don't know. I think if the running back position continues to go the way it's going, you're going to look back and say, man, that guy was really good.
Yeah, so, I mean, he had over 300 touches in 4 straight years with Seattle. I mean, that just outside of, like you mentioned, very rare few, that just doesn't really happen that much anymore.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens with Beast Mode, whether or not he comes back. I suspect we may have seen the last of him in an NFL uniform. He will go back to Oakland, and where he is pretty much the unofficial mayor.
Yeah. do you think he's going to go to Vegas and start serving shots in the parking lot?
I would not be surprised. Would not be surprised.
See some Beast Mode in Vegas.
Wouldn't be surprised at all. The Bears are hiring a new offensive coordinator, Bill Lazor, who was the, you know, everybody did their best Dr. Evil when he was running things in Cincinnati. He's going to take over as the OC there. He's also the OC in Miami for a couple of years in 2014 and 2015. Look, there are so many things. The Bears seem to have pieces, right? I guess the biggest question is Mitch Trubisky, right? We know David Montgomery can be a good running back. Allen Robinson is there at the wide receiver spot. I think they've got some other pieces there. But it's just about whether or not Bill Lazor can make something out of Mitch Trubisky, which will determine how far this Bears offense can go. Now.
Yeah, you know, Mark Helfrich was there for the past 2 years, and it's pretty clear that Trubisky just sort of is what he is. At this point, I'm not entirely excited that, you know, Bill Lazor is going to come in and change Mitch Trubisky's career. I mean, in 2017 to 2018, Lazor, in my opinion, was one of the, you know, 10 worst offensive coordinators in terms of what he was designing, and their production too is just brutal. I mean, they were, you know, bottom half of the league in yards gained, bottom half of the league in points scored too. Look, I think Bears fans and the Bears organization knows that Trubisky long term, mm-hmm. outside of some sort of miracle this coming year, is probably not their guy. But yeah, I mean. I'm not entirely excited about the Lazor brain trust.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if people are, but you can go back and make the case that before this year, Ryan Tannehill had his best season under Bill Lazor.
That's fair.
I don't know if
that was also before the Adam Gase, you know.
Nightmares. True. So I mean, I don't know if that's part of what the thinking is. Maybe it is. Maybe this is sort of like we talked on Monday about the Rams hiring an offensive coordinator. Maybe this is just an opportunity to take some things off Matt Nagy's plate a little bit. You know, again, I don't know that he will give up play calling duties necessarily or what.
They made the playoffs, right? No, that was 2016. They made the playoffs. That was the first year Gase was there. So it was the year after Lazor left. Maybe we're looking back on those years with Ryan Tannehill a little more fondly because Adam Gase left such a bad taste in our mouth.
Perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps we are. The other part of this is, do the Bears go out and try to get a quarterback this offseason? whether it's free agency, like free agency Foles? Is just a seat filler for a year.
Are they going to trade for Foles? Trade for Cam?
Maybe.
That'd be fun.
I feel like Cam is a slightly longer-term solution than maybe Nick Foles is.
Sure.
Nick Foles is, I think, a one-year deal, and you hope that somebody next year in the draft falls your way. Cam, I could see them trying to make it work for a few years.
You know, everybody talks like Cam is so old. The dude's 30 years old. Like, he's about to turn 31. Like, sure, he's dealt with some injuries, but he's not super old. Like, you know, he's certainly taken some hits. He's a huge dude, and obviously we hope he's healthy. But I feel like at the same time, he's dealt with some really unlucky injuries between the shoulder injury and then the foot thing this year. I don't know. I still think Cam Newton has a lot of good football left.
I think so too. It's just a question of where he's going to play that football, if it's going to be Carolina or if it's going to be somewhere else. In Jacksonville, they're looking for a new offensive coordinator now. John DeFilippo has been let go after 1 year as the offensive coordinator there in Jacksonville. It was like about a fall from grace, right? I mean, like in Minnesota, it seemed like he might be the future. They blew him out, brought in Kevin Stefanski. Now he gets blown out in Jacksonville. Although I don't know. Was it totally his fault? I mean, I thought Gardner Minshew came in, did some really good things for a while. Leonard Fournette had arguably his best season.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is just Doug Marrone sort of trying to pivot to save his own job, but I don't know that DeFilippo is necessarily the scapegoat.
I'm with you on that. I'm not entirely sure what Jacksonville's been doing this offseason, right? I mean, like, Dave Caldwell does not have a very good track record. He's spent a lot of time working on that roster and has made quite a few mistakes with some pretty high draft capital picks. And Doug Marrone, for whatever reason, is sticking around. I get that Shad Khan, their owner, wants to kind of keep some continuity, and he believes in the guys that he hired. But at the same time, you know, you keep retreading these offensive coordinators every year and not looking to the big problem, the bigger scale of the problem.
Right.
Jags fans cannot be happy right now.
Gardner Minshew is going to be their starting quarterback next
year,
right?
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
100%. He deserves to be, for what it's worth.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, they have so many good receivers. Their offensive line is not terrible. Fournette finally had a good year. Stayed healthy. I think Gardner Minshew definitely deserves to see if, you know, full year, full offseason, see what he can do.
Well, and on top of that, if the Jaguars can find some way to get out from underneath at least a portion of Nick Foles' contract, I think you sort of have to try that. I think you kind of go with that Seahawks model of how they had Russell Wilson playing so well for relative pennies for years.
The Jags spent, I believe it was like $25 or $30 million guaranteed on Bortles in 2018, and then they gave Foles all that money.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Good luck with that.
Not great.
Good luck with that. All right, there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right, Championship Sunday is upon us. I've already seen some of the Championship Wednesday press conferences. I think I saw Mike Vrabel standing at the podium. I would think we're going to get something from Andy Reid and Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan before the day is out. That'll be interesting to hear about. But for our purposes, for those of you folks who are still playing fantasy in some form or other, just a few topics that will have some importance as to what you may be doing this weekend. Start with the Titans and Chiefs. That is the early game, 3:05 Eastern on CBS, in case you are looking to see what channel the game is on, in case you for some reason don't know that. First one, can Derrick Henry go over 175 rushing yards again? He's done it in the first two games of the postseason. He's become the first player ever to do that. Can he do it again?
God, man.
I mean, look, when these teams played earlier, he went for 188 and two touchdowns.
I know. You know, Derrick Henry is on one of the most impressive runs in NFL history. Seriously, like, that's not hyperbole. Over his last eight games, Henry has gone over 1,100 yards. He scored 11 touchdowns, averaging just an absurd amount of yards per game. Genuinely has put the Titans offense on his back over the last 2 weeks. And now he gets another great matchup against this Chiefs run defense that you know, I mean, we were picking on it all year. They were one of the worst run defense in the NFL, bottom six in yards per carry allowed, bottom 10 in explosive gains allowed on the ground. The biggest thing in this game is can Mahomes and the Chiefs build a lead to kind of keep Derrick Henry not off the field and at bay? It's just more or less, can they force Tannehill to throw more than 15 times?
Right.
And I think the Chiefs certainly have the explosive firepower to do it, and This game is fantastic.
Right.
So many great angles to this game.
Which sort of, you know, my next question was, will Ryan Tannehill have to do things? Because he hasn't had to. They haven't asked him to. Yeah. He hasn't needed to. And I do think, so last week, it sort of worked out in the sense that the Ravens and the Titans kind of wanted to do the same things. They wanted to play defense and run the football. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Lamar Jackson had to throw the ball a ton of times because they fell behind and were trying to play catch up a lot. This is going to be different because you mentioned Patrick Mahomes. He will throw the ball a lot because that's what they do. He is probably going to be more explosive and more efficient than that Ravens passing game was just because he's got more weapons, right? So yeah. I would think that this is going to be a week where Ryan Tannehill is going to have to throw the football. He's going to have to break 100 yards passing, I think, in order for the Titans to win this game.
Yeah, and you know, the Titans have barely trailed this postseason. They've only trailed on like 30 plays. So far, I mean, they've just not been behind at all. They've just been able to ground and pound. Look, Lamar played poorly against the Titans, but he left a lot of plays on the field.
Yep.
And Patrick Mahomes, look, it was one bad game for Lamar. Patrick Mahomes is not going to leave some of those plays on the field. He is gonna have a big, big day. And the Titans, for what it's worth, too. I mean, I know Derrick Henry has been a monster. But Travis Kelce just came off like literally one of the best games for a tight end in playoff history. And the Titans really struggled against tight ends kind of quietly to end the year last year. They finished, I think, allowing the fourth most receptions to tight ends this past year. So Kelce is just in another amazing spot here, too.
Would you throw A.J. Brown into any lineups this week? I mean, he hasn't done much, but again, that goes back to Tannehill not having had to throw the football.
They haven't had to target him. Haven't had to throw it to him. Yes. I know you've been on this all year too, Marcus. Is like the Chiefs are really good at limiting boundary receivers, but they struggle against the slot. But I would have to imagine the Titans will move Brown into the slot here,
I would
right?
think so, right?
Yeah, get some good matchups.
Got to move him around. You know, it's weird because even when they played earlier in the year, like I mentioned, Henry had the huge game. Tannehill didn't do a ton. He had a couple of touchdown passes. I think he had two, maybe three touchdown passes in that game. But I think he had fewer than 200 passing yards. But I think, again, he's going to have to do something to make it work. Is it point chasing to consider Damian Williams at all after his three touchdowns last week?
Well, you can't expect three touchdowns again.
True.
Obviously, there's the obvious caveat. But no, I don't think so. He played on 97% of the Chiefs snaps.
Wow.
Literally did not come off the field in that divisional round game. And this kind of, I know everyone got burnt by Damian Williams this year, myself included. But now in his last five games, I mean, Damian's been really good for fantasy. Like, the production has been there. He's gone over 14 touches now in five straight healthy games. Mm. And this Chiefs offense is always liable for you know, huge touchdown potential. So for me, I don't know if it's necessarily point chasing just because he's got that featured role on lockdown.
That's cool. I mean, which we'd been asking for that all year long. Yeah. It finally took till the end of the year and into the postseason for it to happen. Side note, does this mean are we going to reach for Damian Williams again, only get burned next year?
I know. I've already I'm sure. I mean, I don't even really want to think about it yet, but just because Damian was just, I mean, we've seen it. We've seen the potential every single time he's been healthy. We've seen him, you know, be RB1 for fantasy. It's just, I have no idea where people are going to be comfortable taking him. Like fifth, sixth round? Even in that range, I feel like I'm going to love a lot of players.
Right. And I think so much of it is watching what the Chiefs do in the offseason, who comes back, if they go out and add anybody at that position or what.
I need to see DeAndre Swift in a Chiefs uniform. That's what I need.
That'd be real interesting. Any worries about Tyreek Hill? It's been a while since he had a really big game.
Yeah. I wonder if he's less than 100% because he you know, he's been banged up all year long. Mm-hmm. Missed some time earlier this year with a collarbone injury. He had a hamstring issue in the middle of the year, too. I wonder if he's a less than 100%. But, last week, the Texans just devoted a safety over the top and basically just didn't cover Travis Kelce. You know, I think that's
which is an interesting strategy.
Yeah, I mean, it obviously didn't work for them. I think that's kind of where we're at with Hill. Some of these teams, especially the last three teams that he's faced, right? The Bears, Chargers, and the Texans to a lesser extent, but definitely the Bears and Chargers. They have some really good safeties that can kind of take off the top. And the Texans did a good job in coverage against him. Adoree Jackson has the speed to match up with him, but Hill is always liable for a big score.
Yeah. A bit of news here from Ian Rappaport. And Eddie, this concerns you. According to Mike Garofolo, former Cowboys coach Jason Garrett is in the Giants facility today interviewing for the vacant OC job. Garrett is no longer under contract. So there is a chance that he stays in division, maybe? That'll be interesting. We'll see what happens with
him. I'm happy with that, for the record.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm fine with it. I mean, he's going to get a new job anyway to get to be back being a head coach. He was a solid head coach, didn't get him over the hump. But I think some of the names I threw out, I've seen thrown out there for the Giants OC job. I think Garrett actually is pretty good.
All right, cool. That's good to know that at least one Giants fan is on board.
Right? Yeah,
so that's good. All right, switching over, Packers and 49ers. That is the late game, 6:40 Eastern time on Fox. Obviously, people keep bringing up the fact that these two teams met in Week 12. The Niners won in a blowout there in that one. How much does that game matter? I mean, I guess in some ways it kind of does, but I can't imagine the Niners can walk into this expecting they're going to win by nearly 30 points again.
For sure, but they're a lot healthier now, too. I mean, they didn't have Dee Ford for that game. They didn't have Witherspoon for that game. Now that Dee Ford is healthy, I think it really does change kind of what they can do, right? I mean, like, I don't know. Not Dee Ford. Who am I thinking? Who did they just get back?
They just got Dee Ford back.
Yeah, Dee Ford.
Yeah, my fault. No, you're right.
Aaron Rodgers in that game and the Packers offense did not show up. Only threw for 104 yards and basically just... Look, I'm not entirely sure we can expect the Niners to roll like we saw against the Vikings this past week. They shut down Dalvin Cook.
Right.
Aaron Jones has been on a fantastic tear, and the Packers last week finally committed to him. Like, even though Jamal Williams was healthy, they finally gave Aaron Jones the ball. I'm not entirely sure they can slow down this Packers rushing attack like we saw from the Vikings, but man, like, I'm on the Niners here. You should be feeling... Right now, if I were you, I'd be feeling pretty confident.
I mean, look, I've been saying the whole time, the two teams that scared me in the playoffs as a Niner fan were the Saints and the Ravens. Both of them are gone. And that's not to say that, you know, look, if they run into the Chiefs or something like that, that Patrick Mahomes is a walkover, but just he isn't quite the dual threat that Lamar Jackson is, so I feel a little bit better. Any Packers skill position players that you have any interest in beyond Aaron Jones and Davante Adams?
It's just been a black hole
for
the Packers outside of those two. So, I mean, not really. I mean, Jimmy Graham had a couple nice catches, but that's not something
I mean, they were more
we
chain moving, yeah. You know, game ending catches as opposed to like real production.
That's not something we can rely on. Hey, by the way, do you remember Marquez Valdes-Scantling?
I do. I think I had him early as my, you know, underdrafted guys. Like, hey, you have to be higher on MVS.
My God, what happened?
I don't know.
I mean, he's not playing. He's seriously, like, just not even, he's not even getting snaps at this point.
I mean, they have sort of pivoted to Alan Lazard in a lot of ways. But even then, I don't think he had a target. I don't think Lazard had a target last week.
Yeah, he got hurt in that game.
He got hurt. I know he came back. I think, you know, everything I read about him is, like, they want him out there because he's a good blocker. And I'm like, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily why you pay your wide receivers, but it is a nice feature to have. I also wonder, though. The Seahawks really kind of let Davante Adams roam free a lot, which to their detriment. I can't imagine the Niners are going to do that. They're not going to look at this Packers offense and say, "Hey, you know what? Let's just leave Davante Adams on single coverage." And you know, I have a hard time thinking that's going to happen.
For sure, and the Niners definitely have a lot better corners than the Seahawks. I think people, it's kind of like muscle memory at this point. People think the Seahawks defense is good. It's not.
It's not.
It's not.
No.
The Niners, on the other hand, are fantastic. Richard Sherman, do you think they'll use Sherman as a shadow, because they haven't done that all year, and their other boundary corner, Akello Witherspoon, has been burnt toast.
Yeah, he got torched by Stephon Diggs a couple of times last week. That would be interesting, actually. I think it'd be an interesting matchup to see Sherman go all over the field, because after a while, if you're Matt LaFleur, you just figured how to get Adams on Witherspoon and let him cook.
Right, yeah, exactly. And, you know, the Niners, I don't think they've traveled Sherman with any individual receiver.
I don't
all
believe
this
so
year.
Either.
It'd definitely be a diversion from their usual game plan, but maybe a smart one. I bet we'll see is Adams getting a lot of safety attention.
I'd say, I mean, Jaquaski Tart is back now, too, which is definitely helping in that respect.
That's who I blanked out on earlier.
There it is. Tart, yeah. He's back. Yep. All right, so if you have to pick a QB from this one, Aaron Rodgers or Jimmy Garoppolo?
I want to say Jimmy Garoppolo, just because the Niners are favored here. Packers secondary has kind of been suspect, but I think Aaron Rodgers is going to have to chase this game. And whenever Aaron Rodgers has to chase and play from behind, that's usually fantasy gold. So I'll go Rodgers. It looked like Garoppolo is on his way to having a really nice game after that first drive. I think he had like 6 or 7 throws, really nice ones. And then the Niners just ran the ball.
I mean,
literally the entirety of the rest of the
game. They had that one drive in the third quarter, like after a turnover. where they just ran it like eight times and scored a touchdown.
Yeah,
it was all
with Juszczyk on the field too, and they were just running out of 21 personnel.
Yeah. So speaking of Niners running backs, now what? Right? Like, we were all thinking, hey, this is Raheem Mostert. He's going to be the guy, right? And then it turns into the Tevin Coleman game. So I throw up my hands at trying to decipher what Kyle Shanahan is doing with his running backs right now.
Oh, man. You and everybody else. you know, Tevin Coleman coming off, what, just five carries and basically, you know, less than five carries in four or five straight games and comes out and gets 20 carries. Shanahan's just going to ride the hot hand.
Pretty much.
You know, it could be Mostert, it could be Breida, it could be Coleman. He's got three very talented running backs, and he's very wise, even though it frustrates us for fantasy. He's very wise to use all three of them.
Yeah, I mean, again, the difference between real football and fantasy is that what is great in real football, that unpredictability drives us insane because we want to know who's going to be back there and who's going to get the touches, right, and that sort of thing. And, you know, look, Kyle Shanahan, like his father before him, is very good at throwing wrinkles in those sorts of things, especially with running backs. If you had to pick a 49ers receiver, is it Deebo Samuel or is it Emmanuel Sanders?
I think it's Deebo. I think he's asserted himself here as their number one receiver, and you can kind of tell just based on how Shanahan's using him. You know, not only is he getting put in the right spots, I think, to kind of show his yak ability, they're obviously using him as a running back and kind of getting him involved near the line of scrimmage on some screens. Packers corners just have no shot at stopping Deebo, too. He is so explosive in the open field. I think this is kind of where this game is won, in a sense, is what can the Niners do through the air? Because we know they're going to have some level of success on the ground. That's Shanahan's run offense always travels. But in this game, it's what can they do to get Deebo and Sanders into space, and I'm really excited to see what Shanahan schemes up with their pass attack because the Packers have been leaky all year.
Yeah. Deebo Samuel, in some ways, sort of reminds me of a younger Anquan Boldin.
I like that.
You know,
I like that a lot.
A guy who's not, you know, he's not necessarily blazing fast, but is good with the ball in his hands, is strong, is hard to tackle. It's just, that's who he makes me think.
Man, that makes a lot of sense because back when Anquan Boldin was in college at Florida State, like they used him as a running back, as a quarterback, was fantastic. Obviously, Bolden's one of the best players ever after the catch. I like that comp a lot.
Yeah, yeah, that's when I watch him, he makes me think of Anquan Boldin quite a bit. So, all right, there you go. Those are your championship games. They both should be very entertaining. By the end of Sunday, we will know who is playing in Super Bowl. What is it, 54, right? It's LIV, I think, this year.
Live.
Which is funny, they're having it in South Florida.
It's perfect.
Right. Perfect. Yeah. So I think, you know, I would think that the folks who run Club Live down there are probably smart enough to figure out something.
I think there's probably just a little bit of
I think they figured out some sort of promotional thing. So, all right, cool. We will be back on Monday to sort of recap that. And I don't know, we'll have 2 weeks in between. Maybe we'll do some sort of weird fantasy Pro Bowl thing. I don't know. Anyway, before we get out of here, a couple of stories that caught my eye that I thought were sort of interesting to talk about. One, Chad Johnson, you may remember him as Ocho Cinco, is trying out as a kicker in the XFL. And I also saw this morning that there is another prominent sports blogger, podcaster, who is also trying out as an NFL or XFL kicker. So
I saw that too.
So I'm glad we're taking this seriously as a league after the AAF went belly up. But it did, you know, beg the question: Are you playing any XFL fantasy this year?
God, I saw DraftKings is going to cover it. Mm-hmm. They're going to have some games starting in, I guess, when the league starts on the 8th. I'm going to see how it goes. Let's put it that way. I'm definitely going to watch. There's no doubt about it. I'm certainly going to watch, but I don't have so much interest in that.
Did you play any AAF fantasy leagues?
I did not.
Okay.
I did not. I didn't have the heart to. And
same.
You know, I kind of just, it was right after the season, a long season. Just kind of like, I'm not entirely sure if this league is even going to be around. And then it ended up not. I will say, I'm a lot more, I think I'm a little more like bullish on the XFL. Just a little more long term. I think they've kind of got a little better structure in place. It seems like they aren't just kind of putting this together on the fly. They've been planning it for a couple years. Hopefully the XFL sticks around because, like to see some at least fun football.
Some fun spring football. Yeah, I mean, I also think the XFL, they have a couple of other advantages. One, they saw what the AAF did right and did wrong, and they can kind of adjust from that. Plus, this is not the first go-around for the XFL, so I'm sure Vince McMahon and his people have looked at what went wrong the first time around and can hopefully make some adjustments. This was going to take Tommy Maddox out of the record books as the lone NFL or XFL MVP.
Oh, my God.
He was your one and only XFL MVP, and likely that's going to change when it's all said and done. the other story that I thought was kind of funny. If you've seen this, there is a guy in Kansas City who is a huge Chiefs fan who has decided that he is sort of a jinx for the team. Last year in the AFC Championship game, he was at Arrowhead when, obviously, the Patriots came back. The D Ford offsides happened. Then the Patriots score a touchdown. They end up going to the Super Bowl. This year, he was at the game on Sunday against the Texans. And, obviously, Houston jumped out to a 24-0 lead. He decided that because he's bad luck, he was going to leave the stadium. By the time he got home,
saw this.
The Chiefs had gone on their 41-0 run, had taken the lead, so he watched the rest of the game from his couch. Somebody got this story to Patrick Mahomes and asked him about it, and he said he suggested that the guy stays home this week. He said, do it for the, you know, it's for the kingdom, it's for the best of the Chiefs' kingdom, that you should stay home. And so it just kind of got me thinking, because I feel like sports fans are maybe the most superstitious people on earth. And so I was just curious if you had any sports superstitions as a fan, as a, when you were an athlete, if you had any superstitions.
Like so that. I saw this on the check down. So this guy left the stadium. It was 21-0. He left the stadium, and he said literally as he sat down, they were scoring that Damian Williams. I think it was the Damian Williams wheel route.
Okay.
That he scored on. How wild is that?
That's amazing.
Sport. I mean, I played baseball all throughout like middle school.
And baseball
school,
people are very superstitious.
Baseball people are freaking weird too.
Yes, that's true.
Admittedly. We always, in on my high school team, whenever we'd get down, we had these like two-tier benches in the dugout. Mm-hmm. Instead of sitting on the bottom bench, we would all sit up on the top of the
okay.
bench and get up in a line. And for whatever reason, we thought that would work.
Right.
But yeah, that's certainly one. Baseball's super. I feel like if anything, sports superstitions are more baseball related.
There are a lot of baseball related ones. I mean, you got rally caps and yeah. you know, things like that. I working in minor league baseball, I remember we had a player who was in a slump, and just randomly he had a bunch of napkins, and just without thinking before the game, had a bunch of napkins, stuffed them in his back pocket, ended up getting like four hits that day. So he just kept napkins in his pocket for the next week.
Did you turn it around?
Yeah, he had a really good week.
Nice.
You know, and then he had an offer. He took the napkins out and tossed them or whatever. But like, yeah, I mean that was a thing. I know personally, if I turn on a game and my team is doing okay, and then when I'm watching the game, like bad things start to happen, I will turn the game off.
Yeah,
I have missed games because I don't want to be the reason that they lost.
So I've got a buddy who whenever his team starts doing bad, he'll start moving seats around the house. Like he'll
okay.
like, so instead of like if he's sitting on the sofa or whatever, his mm-hmm. team starts, you know, going down, he'll move around on the to another chair.
Okay.
Try to get some sort of momentum going,
yeah,
get some sort of rally going.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sort of like that.
I used to do a thing back, this was back when USC football really had it going under Pete Carroll. I had this belief that I had to wear at least one item of USC clothing during their games. If I was wearing some USC clothing and they lost, that's just because they played bad or something happened. If I wasn't wearing anything and they lost, I sort of felt personally responsible for it, even though I know that makes no sense. I will never forget when they were a 41-point favorite to Stanford and lost at home at the Coliseum, and I was not wearing any USC clothing. I felt – and I was out. It's not like I could like run home and change and put on a T-shirt. Like, I was out, and – so I was like, they're a 41-point favorite. Why am I going to stay home and watch this? It's going to be a blowout. And I found out later they lost. And I was sort of inconsolable for a couple of hours because I felt like it was totally my fault that they lost.
It was your fault, Marcus.
It is.
Totally your fault.
I still believe that. I still believe that if I had put on, like, I don't know, a T-shirt or some socks or something that they would not have, and the name Tavita Pritchard would have just been lost to history and not become a part of Stanford lore. So there you go. All right. That's it. I think we are done. Hopefully you enjoy your weekend for championship weekend. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, if you don't annoy your siblings occasionally, they'll think you don't love them anymore. We'll see you on Monday.